Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is Barry Green, the Chief Data Officer at the Bank of Ireland.
Yeah, so a couple of things. First of all, it's not just about data. So, and that kind of might sound a bit silly, but I use process to contextualize data. So if you think about the organization as a square, and data is everywhere in that square, and then if you think about the CEO, the CIO, the CFO, risk, finance, you know, sales, marketing, they all have slices of that square. Whereas data is everywhere in that square. And I think the problem with talking about data is that you can't really contextualize it. So the first thing I sort of talk about is say, look, it's not just about data. So we don't want to be a data-driven organization. So for us, we want to be a customer-driven organization. Data just enables that. We want to be digital. Data just enables that. And then the other kind of one of my key things is that the problem statement is pretty common. It's the same. It's just the lens that you're looking at it through. So that's my process is quite critical. It enables you to look at something discrete, enables you to look at something you understand. And then you can basically look at data in that context and say, okay, good. So now we can go ahead and do something with data. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, it does. It's setting, and it's probably actually quite difficult to articulate those points at times. Because as you say, people, I think, expect a chief data officer to come in and go like, right, make us data driven. But I've heard it a couple of times now that, you know, the goal isn't data driven. And actually I've heard couple of people, I think friends of yours, kind of cringe at the terminology and the use of data-driven. So it's a C-level role that actually covers a vastly broad spectrum of the organization. So the next thing that I suppose you have to kind of manage is the kind of closeness and the relationships and the strategic people that you'll have who you work closely with within an organization. Again, probably something that a lot of people may be surprised about who you're kind of working with consistently on a daily basis. But as you mentioned, it must be quite a broad set of individuals.
Yeah, I think it is. So there's a couple of things. So if you use process, and you know, then you basically understand what's going on in their part of the world. So you know what their lens of the organization is, or their lens is into data, and you can talk about that with them in their language. That kind of helps. But you know, I'll be honest. I struggle with everyone understanding this. So for me, and I think a lot of the people they're the CDOs I talk to. This just seems obvious, but actually it's not obvious to everyone. And so just trying to find out, so there's kind of key. So when I set up the data office, I actually had a role for communications and change specifically because I see that as being a fundamental part of getting everyone on board, because it's not just about data. It's also about change. So, you know, changing the way we think about, changing the way that we understand how the organization operates through process and data. So, you know, things like I sort of say collaboration is the new black. It's the problem statement's common. It's the lens that's different. I've kind of developed some kind of, I don't know whether you call them catchy, but kind of simple terminology that people can relate to. And we're in a process of doing our second policy rewrite. So we're trying to brand it in terms of the three C's. So it's correct our data, collaborate, so manage and understand their data better through collaboration and create value. So whenever we talk about anything we're doing now, we're saying, so that's a create activity or that's a collaborate activity. And while they may be more or one of those, we just try and stick to one. So what's the main thing we're trying to do? So and again, it's about building a simple story that everyone relates to. And, you know, I didn't make this up. It came from someone else. And I just basically took their idea and made it mine. And sort of adopted it to the stuff that I've been doing around comms. But I think it's important to have a simple message that you can get everyone to relate to. Because, you know, you can sit down and talk about data models and, you know, all sorts of fancy technology stuff and data stuff that we all think is quite obvious, but most people think is boring, actually. It's not sexy. Same with process, right? It's not boring. I mean, it's not sexy. It's pretty dull to most people. So that's why, you know, what are we doing today? We're going to create value. And how are we going to do that? We're going to do that through us. And this is how it's going to add value to your business or your part of the organization. And, you know, this is the tool we're going to use. That's as opposed to we're putting in place data management tooling and this is what it does. We're going to have a business glossary and a taxonomy and blah, blah, blah. You know, people have, you've lost them if you start with that stuff. You've got to try to almost reverse it and talk about it from the other way around. That's I think, is really important.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. And I think it's about this building a vision, really. It's starting from what you're working towards. And maybe even mentioning it, you know, in like, you know, I don't want to say layman terms, but high level kind of, you know, easily articulated ways to where people can grasp the concepts that you're actually working on. I wonder whether, you know, from your experiences, there's been a level of kind of managing expectations when it comes to what you're actually trying to do. Is there expectations that are set when you come into a role or as you continuously progress through a role that you have to just have these kind of conversations where it's like, this is actually what our outputs are going to be. This is what you can expect. This is how we're going to help efficiencies, and this is what we're going towards. People are very KPI driven these days. So is there ever you know, a clarification of, you know, what it is that you can expect from a data team? And is there typical and common misconceptions with that regard?
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to what I talked about at the start, is having so understanding what part of the data you look after. So, you know, I've got agreement with the CISO here about what he looks after. You know, the DPO is another role where technically you could say that's data, but actually there's a, you know, data privacy officer needed. Now, they're going to need to implement all the frameworks for you know, managing data. But you know, you need to kind of understand where the boundaries come and go on these different roles. I think the other key thing is, one of the things I did was not try and create shadow organizations for data. So, you know, I went and talked to the guys, the architecture guys, and said, I don't want to hire architects. You've already got them. We need to work together. So it's about trying to build that. Again, it's about collaboration. It's about trying to build a shared vision for doing things that's going to benefit everyone. I think I've seen sort of in the past, people have kind of created data organizations and they've hired all these shadow organizations to do stuff, instead of trying to work within the organization. So I think you've got to understand what's going on in the organization, take what's working well. They may have started things and not finished things. They may not have started some stuff. So work out where that naturally sits and then try and engage with them. I describe the CDO as a conduit for change in the organization. So it's about pulling together the different parts of the organization to work more effectively. So think about that square again where, you're kind of, you know, I get to hear about all these different things because everyone comes to me and says, oh, look, this is data related. So can you fix it for me? Wait a second. It's not data related. It just has data in the title. So it doesn't mean that I own it. And then it's about saying, so what your problem is, this is what I think your problem is. You know, is that how you see it? Okay. So let's think about how we might fix that. It's kind of, you know, how you might go about handling that. So it's really a lot of what I do now is now that I've kind of set up this quote unquote core infrastructure, we're trying to operationalize it. I spend more and more time getting around the organization, understanding what's going on, driving consistency through the frameworks that we're putting in place or putting out there, and then it's sheer making sure that we connect as many people as possible so that the organizations start to work together, because a lot of organizations work in really tight silos. So breaking those down is kind of a key part of the role, I think. And then obviously that helps the understanding of what you're responsible for and how you can help.
That's fascinating to, you know, think that a chief data officer would literally be, I suppose, striving for essentially cultural change, right? It really is that, I suppose. If one silo or one department isn't bought into what the data team's working, then it almost doesn't all work. So you have to kind of influence all sectors, which is just incredibly challenging to do. Something I've had nowhere near to the extent that obviously you've had, but you know, trying to create, you know, change culturally is a monumental task. How are you approaching that? You know, I'm sure this was part of the role that you probably expected it, but to the extent that it is, you know, is it as difficult as I'm making it out? Or
No, it definitely is. It's so as simple as I've tried to make things, and you know, I've influenced bottom up, top, and trying to do top down as well. It's a never ending battle, right? You just got to keep at it. I guess there were some kind of key messages I had at the start. One was, you know, what has to be done is obvious. So the way I describe it is project management and data management have been around for about the same time. I think we've actually codified project management to the point of being not that useful anymore, because you just have drones who don't really understand how to solve problems. They just tick boxes. Whereas with data management, you know, there were some good philosophies and disciplines created. But effectively, it was too hard. They slowed things down. So my messages have been, this is going to be hard work. You know, there's going to be stuff that's going to be uncomfortable, and you know, there will be some things that we have to do that are going to be add some work onto what you do today. But we'll be as pragmatic as possible. So I kind of use the term data purist and data pragmatist, and say, look, I'm definitely in the camp of being a data pragmatist. So we just need to get something done, get it started, see how it's working, and then change it and make it more effective. You can't aim for the sort of 100% success or 100% model. It's not going to work, especially in the way that, you know, business models are changing. The things are moving quickly. Legislation is basically coming in all the time. So you have to adapt. So I think it's kind of a key part of it is really about making whatever you do, letting people know that it's not going to solve all their problems, but you're there to help and get them to understand how it's going to help. But also get people to understand that it's just hard work. And it's just about repeating the same message, because what tends to happen, or what I've seen happen here anyway, is that people have kind of nodded, yes. And then one day the light comes on and they come and talk to me and go, oh my God, this is going to be so much work. But it's a bit like, you know, if you've got kids, you kind of know that, you know, some kids go to school and they learn really quickly, and others take 2 or 3 years. It's about being ready to learn. And I think organizations are the same. And parts of organizations have different willingness to learn or readiness to learn. And you've just got to kind of work around that and understand how that is, and you know, where your organization's at and where the easy parts are, and then get them to be your advocates, and then try and work on getting the people who really don't understand, and just spend more time influencing them to the point where they actually understand it. And sometimes it's not just about you. You've got to get other people to just talk about your message as well, so that, because it's not just about one person. It's about the organization change. So it's cultural. It's got to be, everyone's got to be starting to say the same message. So simple messages all the time, so that no one gets confused. And even if they don't quite understand it, hopefully at some point they do understand, because, you know, the penny drops with them and they go, oh, I get it now. That's what that means.
You know, it's really persistence, isn't it? Strategic persistence, of course, you know, but that is a big proponent of it.
Yeah, you've got to have a strategy that says, you know, we're doing this and we want to get to here. But, you know, strategies, relatively everyone wants to have more customers, more profit, happy employees, pretty much, right? And most strategies pretty much advocate that in some guys. So it's about saying, what are we going to do in data and process and all this crappy work that we're doing to map process and all that, because it's hard work. But where's the value? How do we get value out of it? And just explaining how that was going to work. And, you know, do we need to map everything to the nth degree? No, let's do it at a high level and then work our way down. Just, you've got to kind of come up with ways that people will at least start once they start seeing the value, then it kind of become, it starts to snowball. So we've seen an example here where something's happened. You know, it was nearly going off a cliff, and that everyone was starting to lose focus on it. And then all of a sudden, there's lots of monetary value that's been gained from this activity. And you know, so it's easy for me now to say, hey, by the way, you know, by doing the data stuff, this, you know, we're already getting more value, and this is part of the data strategy. Now, I didn't do any of that, but without the data stuff, it would all fall by the wayside eventually, because it just won't work. So it's about tying, you know, other people's success to letting them explain how their success has been predicated on some of the stuff that you've done.
Yeah, exactly. You need those advocates and those kind of case studies, I suppose. So they're the most difficult, is to just get the initial ones across the line. So you really have to look to people who are bought in for those. But and then when you get some kind of data points, to be able to say to people, right, well, when we did this, this was the result, and that's positive. So what do you think about that? It's almost like you're constantly kind of selling people internally on the benefits that this is going to produce for them. Is there ever the concern on an individual level for people, what they're personally going to get out of it? Is that ever the problem, or is it just really the teams in general? You know, you can have the kind of naysayers, and that makes life quite difficult. What's typically the difficulty there? And
it's a bit of both, right? So everyone's happy for change to happen as long as it's not their area. I mean, ownership's a good one, where if you think about what we've basically said is that as we map process, we'll understand the critical data. And then through doing that, we then need to get a workshop and determine sort of end-to-end ownership for a complicated process, sub-process for the bits that make up that process that are material, and then the data. And everyone's like, that's a great idea. But we don't do that today. It's like, yeah, I know. And it's hard, and it's not being done hardly anywhere else. But it is being done in places. But it's a result of, and you know, these are the benefits it brings. And no one's saying it's not the right thing to do, and it's not what they should be doing. But they're kind of a little bit scared, because it starts to mean that there's going to be real accountability, and it's going to be in a system where it says you own the risk-weighted asset process, or you own the AML process. So as long as people aren't saying you can't do that, it's the wrong thing, you know you're starting to get onto a winner. Because you know, if they're saying actually that's the right thing, we should be doing this and we need that, but it's going to be super hard. Of course it's going to be super hard. You know, how do we help get it done? And we just have to start, you know, let's not codify and govern everything to the nth degree. Let's just get on and get something done, see how it works. If it doesn't work the way you thought, then change it, and then make it work to fit the organization. I think that's key, right, is that kind of iterative approach.
Yeah, I agree. And your approach as well in influencing people, I'm sure that is something that has to be versatile and change. But to make those kind of adjustments, it's probably healthy to have, you know, a network of people to sort of, for lack of a better term, sort of spar different ideas with, people who've maybe come across, you know, similar problems, and how you can influence and overcome these hurdles. You know, we met, I thought, through mutual connections. So is it something that you kind of rely on, is people externally to spar, you know, ideas and concepts from? Where, you know, when you're going through, you know, points of friction and things like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the really nice thing I think about the CDO network is that we're all quite happy to share, because actually what we're sharing is not rocket science. We all kind of get it. But by sharing the way things have worked in our own organizations, and it kind of just helps us think about things differently. And it also helps having people who are naysayers in your own organization, because, you know, they can, if you can come up with arguments and show that what they're saying doesn't make any sense, they become an advocate as well. They may be a kind of a negative, positive advocate. So they're saying, oh, this is really hard work, and oh, I'm not sure this is going to work, and we haven't done this properly. But, you know, let's get on and get some done, and then we'll try it. You kind of know you've won them over then, right? Because once you start doing something, it's easy enough to fix. You know, if the idea that you had is not 100% correct, which it probably won't be, you can easily kind of iterate that to a point where actually it's going to work in for the organization that you're working in. Because every organization is different, right?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And like as you were saying about the kind of the CDO network, it's I think it does have that real strong network because everyone's kind of working towards a collective goal because you've all probably experienced the things that, you know, we've already mentioned today, the level of frustration, but because everyone's just passionate about getting everyone on board with this, you know, kind of data movement that you guys are working towards. And, you know, you are still, you're nowhere near all the way there yet, you know, to where a lot of organizations are thinking in these terms and are making these kind of cultural adjustments. So I suppose because of that, you know, it's kind of natural that network would become quite close-knit, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's cultural change, so it's going to take years. It doesn't just happen overnight, right? It's about when we did the policy, we created a term called fixed forward, and the whole basis of fixed forward is, you know, in banking anyway, we've got this massive legacy problem, and if we try and fix all that legacy problem and don't focus on stuff that we're doing to make ourselves better, we just create more legacy. So the idea was we fix forward all the key change projects, so we change through change, so that hopefully that's going to be easier. And we do things so that when they go back at the BAU, we use this kind of framework we've put in place so that there's real ownership and all that sort of stuff and there's data quality running. But by using the term fix forward, people kind of got it. And I remember, you know, it's probably a couple of months later when I was in a meeting and someone was talking about fix forward. They'd never met them before. I didn't know who the heck they were. And here we are in a meeting where they're talking about fix forward. And I was thinking, great. Clearly people are starting to use this term. Clearly people are talking about the stuff that I've been talking about. And it's starting to permeate. And now I've got people telling me about fix forward and why we should be using fix forward. And I'm going, yeah, I know that we did that with the data policy. That's how that term came about. Oh, right. So I kind of knew that we'd made some success there. So again, it all goes back. It's all the same point, right? Simple terms, consistent messaging, iterate things, make things simple. Make things fit for the organization. It's not really rocket science. It's just really hard because it has that cultural change piece to it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you must be really passionate and kind of motivated on, you know, what you're working towards. I think it goes without saying, you know, just listening to you talk about everything today. But, you know, have you always kind of felt this passionate? And I'm assuming your work will never be done on this matter. But you know, it must be massively motivating. And when was that kind of penny drop moment, I suppose, if there was one, where you just felt as though, you know, this is something that I really feel passionately about, and I would hope that, you know, every organization, if possible, is starting to think in these terms.
So when I was at HSBC, I was lucky enough to help set up the first kind of CDO organization there with a couple of other CDOs, and the group CDO, Peter Serenita. And at that point, I kind of realized that I was in a room with all these data experts, and actually I didn't feel out of my depth. And then I kind of sat back and realized that all through my career, I'd used data and process to fix things. And it was just common sense to me. And so I thought, you know what? This is the career for me, because the job didn't exist when I thought I wanted to be a COO. So I was a COO, and I just thought this is the way forward. There's just so many benefits, you know, for employees, for customers, for everyone. It's exciting because you're always learning as well. There's always new technology coming out, and I don't like to focus on the technology so much because I think there are more important things. But, you know, the technology is quite cool, and, you know, you can do cool stuff with it, and it just helps. So, you're always learning from – and. Like the CDO network, you're always learning new ideas or talking to people and sharing ideas. So it's a lot more collaborative than perhaps a lot of other parts of not only banking but a lot of other industries. I think it's just a great place to be.
Yeah. And you must have been, I suppose, a relatively early adopter, because although we kind of are talking about, you know, CDO, it's still a relatively new role in itself. So you must have been around some, you know, forward-thinking individuals, you know, at HSBC, as you mentioned, to now be in a position where, you know, you're really driving for this change. I suppose you were just one of those guys. You got it, you know, first in school, weren't you?
You're not always. I cut class a lot.
But yeah, you know, this stuff. I get up in the morning and I'm pretty excited about what I do, and I really do think there's lots of benefit. It's really about trying to get that, everyone else to understand what the benefit is. Because the thing is, you know, I say it's not just about data. So everyone's got day jobs and everyone's got their own pressures and concerns. So it's not just about data. It's about how do I help them get what they need to get done. And so it's kind of, that for me is kind of the benefit. I don't necessarily need to be the rock star on stage. I'm quite happy being the guy, knowing that actually if I hadn't done all this stuff, the band wouldn't be on stage in the first place. You know what I mean?
I definitely do know what you mean. I can relate in my role, actually, in a lot of cases. So, I agree. That's enough to feel good. We mustn't be too narcissistic then, mustn't we? We must be all right. I don't want to keep you much longer, Barry. I'm sure you've got some dinner to get to, or maybe another flight to catch in your instance. you know, just to kind of close it down here, you know, working with people from all different, I suppose, backgrounds as you are doing now, and working with so many different teams, how much are you, do you feel you're kind of learning from that? And do you think that data teams are going to be one of the first teams that start to kind of break down boundaries when it comes to, you know, the true kind of sense of diversity and sharing of thought? Do you think that data teams have that opportunity to do so now? Because I suppose the access to being part of a data team, you know, that it can be quite broad, you know, from one's background.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things there. So one of the terms I don't like is data stewards. And the reason I don't like it, I know it's an industry accepted standard, right? He says, in, you know, having kind of exclamation marks as he says it, is that it implies that it's one person or a couple of people's role to look at data. And so the job of a CDO is to make sure that everyone understands their responsibilities around data. So, you know, we kind of talk about, you know, data producers, consumers, governance, ownership, and I always forget the other ones. The role we call the technology guys. But there's five roles that we use. And effectively, so everyone's got a responsibility, and actually you could be a consumer, producer, and have a governance role, or you could be a consumer, producer, and have an ownership role, or even a governance role. So there's lots of different roles you can have. So, and I think you need a mixture of data purists and data pragmatists, because you need your data purists to kind of keep you on the straight and narrow sometimes, but you need the pragmatists to get things done and to be able to talk to the business in their language. So absolutely, I think there's a real need for lots of different types of people. But from what I've seen of the CDOs who seem to be successful, we all come from really different backgrounds, but, you know, whether they be technology or business or whatever, but we all have similar views. I think that having different backgrounds is useful because it allows you to do different things and see things differently. But if different people from different backgrounds kind of come up with the same solution, you kind of know, I think, you know, you're going in the right direction.
Yeah. It's a good point, Barry. We'll close it down there, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time out of the day. It was really interesting getting your thoughts, and I'm so excited about this sort of mini CDO series that I've managed to put together. Everyone's been amazing, and you included in that, Barry. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.